Thank you all for coming, for being here. Thank you also to everyone who helped to organize this, and for all of you who will be helping to keep it going. If I say something that you don't understand, please feel free to speak up. Yes, I'll try to speak simply. But if I say something you don't understand, please feel free to say so, to speak up. Okay? I'm very happy we were able to go to the service, the Kampline, this evening. Maybe for some of you it was a bit of a surprise. We're doing a Zen retreat. Why are we going there? But I trust you could see that we are sharing this space for the next couple of days with these people. And so it's a gesture. It's not just a gesture, but certainly it is that as well, to share in their practice as well. I trust also that you may have gotten a sense, a taste, that whether you are Catholic or not, it's important in our own practice to make peace with the religious tradition that we grew up in. Many Westerners, when I was young, myself included, were running towards the Orient, towards Buddhism, towards Zen, and perhaps running away from the religious tradition that we grew up in, seeing all the things wrong in the religious tradition we grew up in naturally, and perhaps idealizing the tradition of the Far East. Many of you here have been to the Far East, so some of the scales from your eyes may have fallen. There's good and there's bad in every religious tradition. So whether you are, I'm not Catholic, I was brought up as a Protestant. I trust you could get a taste of how important it is to share in another religious tradition. And part of that is being able to make peace with the religious tradition you grew up in. I couldn't understand the Dutch, but I did a little homework on the web. I found out that every day of the year there is a certain Kampline service, and there are some things that are added, but basically there's a set form, and you can find out that in the, on the web, and of course in English as well as other languages. So it seemed to be quite a appropriate, natural service for us to begin our retreat. We're not doing a Catholic retreat, but we are doing it here. So I'm very grateful that we could be a part of that. One of the things I learned from doing that this evening was that the Catholic, the Christian, may not have a greater God, but they certainly have a greater gong. Did you see that? Did you see that? It's beautiful. But anyway, we have some. But I hope it was not disturbing for you, unsettling for you. And if it was, well, maybe we can learn from that. But I think it was the most appropriate way for us to begin the retreat here. We have never done a retreat here. Karim has come here on his own and sat. But this is the first time for us to use this space as a group. And I think it was a good way to begin it. Compliant, as I understand it itself, the very word, there's a sense of completion, not just the end of the day, but there's a spiritual sense there. So, in a very real sense, I hope that you can consider this retreat much smaller than we usually do. A retreat where we can really complete our practice. Something that we have maybe been working on, struggling with for some time, in some way or other, but to complete that practice, not to forever be trying to attain something, but actually to complete the practice in a very real sense. Many of us, perhaps all of us, made quite a sacrifice, great effort, financial, time-wise, to come here tonight. Other people also had to make a sacrifice, family, the people that we have left behind. So I urge you to please, as Harm also mentioned, to make our best efforts to strive to be worthy of this precious opportunity that we have and that many people have sacrificed so that we could all be here. What is it that we are really trying to do here anyway? We come from different backgrounds, even from different countries. Some of us have been practicing for a very long time. Some of us have not. It makes no difference. As a group, now, all of us together, practicing, of course, in a sense, each one of us in our own way, through our own practice, and yet also we are practicing as a group together, mostly in silence, but that doesn't mean that there's no communication going on. There's often very, very marvelous communication going on. Doesn't have to be spoken. So we are doing this together, but what are we really trying to do here? Very simply, in accord with the Zen Buddhist tradition, we could say to end self-delusion, to end the delusion of self, to end the self that seeks for an end. And in that way, to realize the true freedom that we are. We could also say it is true health, true well-being, wholeness. We're not here to learn new ways of dealing with our interpersonal relationships, for example. Although, done properly, this practice should certainly lead in that direction. But that is not the only, or certainly the purpose that we are doing it for. We're not trying to learn to view the world in a new way, to take one view of the world, for example, a Christian one, or an atheist one, and replace it now with a Buddhist view. Of course, in learning about Buddhism, that may happen, but that's not the purpose of a retreat, to replace one view with another one. And we're really not here, for example, to learn how to deal with our thoughts or our emotions, or even for our thoughts and emotions to come to an end. That's may happen, but that's not really the purpose, or we certainly shouldn't be preoccupied with that during the retreat. What we're doing here is really not anything as difficult or complicated as that kind of thing. When it all comes down to it, we're doing something much simpler than that. We're not doing anything so difficult or complicated. There are even expressions, Buddhist Zen expressions, that make this clear. For example, the mind, literally the mind of nirvana, the mind of awakening, the mind of nirvana is easy to clarify. Once you've done it, it is, but speaking from that direction, it's true. The mind of nirvana is easy to clarify. The wisdom of discrimination, of distinction, of real difference, is hard to enter. This kind of quote is pointing just to that. The mind of nirvana is easy to realize. It's really not so difficult. To clarify that, not so difficult. But then from there to work it out in the world, that can be very difficult, very demanding. In a retreat like this, naturally the focus, especially in the beginning, is not on working it out in the world, but rather on clarifying, making crystal clear, unmistakably clear, what this mind is, what the source of this is. And then we can deal with working it out in the world. But a retreat, naturally, is a matter of, you might say, going to the very bottom, to the very source. I assure you, when the retreat is over, and you have to go back to your family, to your work, you will have plenty of opportunities to work it out in the world. But we shouldn't be preoccupied with those concerns while we're here. Again, the fundamental mind of nirvana, realizing that mind, awakening to what we really are, in a sense, it's really not so difficult. We can say the hard part is then working that out, making that real in every aspect. But once again,
This is the easy part. We have an ideal situation here. This kind of it's a small, low-key, small group of like-minded people, simple meals, simple place to go back and rest. Everything's taken care of for the next couple of days. We can, for ourselves, make unmistakably clear what this mind is, what the source of the conflict is. And having done that, then we can see about working it out in every aspect of our lives. There's a famous Buddhist sutra called the Lotus Sutra. It's been translated into English, probably into Dutch. It's one of the greatest Mahayana Buddhist sutras. And there's a very interesting story in one chapter, which I would like to use as a kind of a theme. I couldn't pick up anything to make the point clear, but I think you will see in the next few days, for various reasons, this is a very good one at this time, this place, for us. In the Lotus Sutra, chapter 7, it says that there is this Buddha. Literally, his name, they have very rather pompous sounding names. He's something like the Buddha of penetrating wisdom. Penetrating wisdom Buddha, something like that. The all-knowing Buddha, something like that. And this all-knowing great wisdom Buddha, the Lotus Sutra explains, is seated on the It's literally the wisdom throne, you know, the kind of lotus-shaped flower throne. In other words, it's the perfect place in which to practice. And he's seated there, perfect mental and physical state. His perfect full lotus posture and his mind is completely at rest, completely motionless in body and in mind. It even says he has, it's a metaphor, but he has destroyed the army of Mada. Mada is illusion, delusion, all of the stuff that goes on in our mind that we get tangled up in. This Buddha of great wisdom, penetrating wisdom Buddha, has destroyed all illusion. All that illusion, it's gone. The whole, again, it's a metaphor, the army of, you know, of Mada, illusion, dissolved. I will continue with this story tomorrow morning and Saturday morning and even Sunday morning at the end. But for now, our present task here and now is very simply in the context of this story from the Lotus Sutra for you, each one of you, to be this Buddha of all knowing wisdom, no more, no less. To sit, we have this lotus throne, this ideal situation that we've been given here, to really pour ourselves, give ourselves completely to this practice. So, it's a bit of a strange metaphor perhaps, but destroying the army of Mada, to let go of all of those self-entanglements. That is, we might say, our first task. Not to think about that, but actually to sit and be that. So grounded in body and in mind. So silent and still in body and in mind. That we are this Buddha, all penetrating wisdom. This is where we begin. This is our first task. As difficult as it may be, sitting through the night, for example, and having some pain, but through all of that, sitting completely in that, whatever our present situation is, we don't need to create any ideal about what this Buddha is, simply sitting here and now, in each moment of our practice, completely being that, giving ourselves completely to this practice. Be this Buddha of all penetrating wisdom. How do we do this? For those who are more or less beginners, the breath is very helpful. Breathing naturally, so to speak, from our belly, and just gathering our energy into one. We're not trying to create any visions or realize any truths or anything like that. To, using the metaphor, destroy the army of Mada. A very simple way is simply gathering all of the energy that we have into one. The breath can be very helpful there. Using the breath as a kind of a pointer. Not forcing it, but naturally over time you'll see it becomes you don't need to force anything. Simply taking all the energy that you have. It's enough. You don't need superhuman energy. Simply taking the energy that you have, but all of it. And patiently rolling it all into one. In the beginning, it may be helpful almost to kind of picture it below your belly. Using the breath and the sitting, zazen, the sitting itself, we can say, in a sense, 90%, perhaps even 99% of the work is right there. If there is something that is really driving you in your practice, you have what could be called a koan, a genjo koan, the koan here and now of your life, or perhaps a given koan, something, a koan recorded in a book, but that has become your living question, doubt. This is not another thing. This is simply an anchor in helping you to gather all of that energy into one. Whether you call it a koan or not, doesn't matter. If you are gathering all of that energy into that one, whether it is the sitting itself, that's fine, or some specific doubt, great doubt, or koan. Again, not simply something that's written in a book, but something that is alive and burning for you. Then you can make use of that. But again, it must be your own living, breathing question, doubt. It must be the doubt, the question that you are. If there is no such specific question, fine. The sitting itself is enough. Giving ourselves completely to that, so that the whole army of Mara, illusions themselves, can just dissolve. We don't have to destroy them. I would not use that metaphor. The sutra does. It can easily be misunderstood, right? I'm fighting, ripping. It's not that kind of an action at all. It's a metaphor. When it's done in a stable and mature way, it's a perfectly natural and constant activity. You can say it's an effort, but it's not really an effort of the will. It's as natural as our breathing, but there's a total focus on that one point. You see? All of our energy is right there, whether it is a koan or the sitting itself. It doesn't matter. If you don't have some koan that's burning for you, you don't have to try and find one. Okay? You are that koan, whether it is realized in the sitting itself, even just in the breathing itself, or in some formulated koan. It doesn't matter. As long as it is you, your total self, moment to moment. It's as simple as that. You'll find sometimes it wanders. That's okay. The point, of course, is to be aware of that. And once you're in this kind of a concentration, it's very easy to be aware of it. So almost as soon as you start to drift, you're aware of it, and you simply come back. You don't need to create thoughts about it, or judge yourself, compare yourself with the person sitting next to you, or whatever. That's just more of the army of Mara. Simply return to. If the mind wanders again, especially maybe at night when you're tired, simply, naturally, patiently, return to one. Can you see why, in that sense, having a koan can be helpful? You see? Because it keeps you anchored. It keeps the mind from wandering, because there's a kind of a, it's locked in on this. There's the need to know, to see through this. Again, if you don't have one, don't worry about it. But if there is one that naturally occurs for you, for some people it's, who is this at the bottom? Who am I? That's a good one. If that is a breathing, living question for you, then you can use it. If not, simply give yourself to the immediate practice. With each moment, simply give yourself just sitting the breath totally as one. That in itself is enough. Okay? But you see how, if your mind wanders and it's difficult to gather it all into one, just with the breath, it can be done. But if it's difficult, if we can find the right koan that works for you, that drives you, yes, I must see through that. Then this, you see, this can become a great anchor, a great force in your practice. Not simply the will, not simply the will. The will, we're still on the outside trying to push in. It's a much more subtle thing than mere will. It's, you might say, the truth itself coming out. It's not us trying to push in. It's the truth itself. Reality itself coming out. So it's not an effort, the will. That's why we're able to sit through the night. It's really not that difficult. Sometimes you may be a little sleepy. You have some coffee, some tea, maybe walk around, freshen yourself up, splash some water on your face. And then you can go back to sitting. It's really not that difficult to sit through the night. Because the mind is so engaged in this that it would be impossible to do anything else. How could you possibly go to sleep? You know, if you're really working on something, you have to know. You can't go to sleep, right? You have to know. So you are naturally driven. Again, not the will, not mere will, but there's the need to get to the bottom, so to speak. And that can really help you in your practice. So sitting through the nights, thinking about it can be very tiring. But actually doing it, it's really not that difficult. And we're only doing it two nights. So please make use of that opportunity. And you will see probably there will be moments where it's very difficult to hold on to this. That's okay. That very working with that itself is a very valuable lesson. It's a very valuable lesson. Be aware. You're seeing what mind does. You are becoming aware of what is always going on in your mind, but we're not normally seeing. So that in itself is already very, very valuable. Do not separate from your experience. Okay? We're not trying to have some special experience, some transcendent experience. We're simply being fully what we are at this moment. You see? That's the sheer simplicity. And for our ordinary wandering mind, yes, it's very difficult. But when we actually become settled, it becomes the most natural thing in the world. We realize the difficulty is really what the mind is doing. That's the hard part, all the stuff that the mind does. This is not difficult. But for the ordinary, wavering, wandering mind to do this, right? It seems very difficult. But once we actually settle in and become attuned to it, we realize, oh, this is what I am. This is what is at bottom. I'm not creating something. This is what is at bottom. So even to say it's easy is already a step away from what it originally really is. So again, some degree of determination is important, but the fact that you're already here, you have already made this commitment, I don't think we need to push a lot more that way. You've already made your commitment, we're here. So now, direct what is called in Buddhism right effort, not wrong effort, right, correct really means. You know, the Eightfold Noble Path, often right understanding, but it may be better to say correct, proper effort is also one of the Eightfold Noble Path. Right effort. Not the will forcing itself from outside, but this coming to fruition, this becoming manifest of itself. This is not getting in the way. Not getting in the way is defeating the army of Mara itself. Once again, this is our first task, to actually sit and be that fact ourselves. Would you like to stand up and stretch for a moment? Please feel free. We'd like to stretch for a moment. I heard that there was a Dutch song about John Paul Jones. Here comes John Paul Jones, that fine fellow, something like that. Maybe before your generation.
I think so.
Well, we even have two people that aren't Dutch here anyway. But why do I bring this up? John Paul Jones, you may know, was kind of the father of the American Navy, of all things. We were talking about the Army a moment ago, weren't we? Now we're talking about the Navy. John Paul Jones was a great naval hero in the Revolutionary War, American fighting against the British. He was a very eccentric, very determined man. And one of, well, his most famous fight was with a vastly stronger ship with many more cannons than he had on his ship. His ship was not even a military vessel, but it was rebuilt so that it could have some military firepower. And they were fighting in the sea off of England. And among other problems, some of the cannons on John Paul Jones' ship blew up. Instead of shooting the cannon, the cannon blew up and killed some of his men. And then, of course, the cannon was useless. The British ship that was fighting was very strong and was showering them with cannons. So their ship was burning, was on fire, out of control, burning. It was also so damaged that it was sinking. So his ship was sinking. What was still above was burning. At which point, John Paul Jones decided to crash his ship into the other ship. And they have a way of locking on to the ship, right? So it can't get free. So that's what he did. And when he brought his ship over, the British commander naturally thought, he's giving up. So he yelled over to John Paul Jones, "Do you surrender? Do you surrender?" His ship was sinking and the boat was on fire and the cannons had exploded. But John Paul Jones' response was, "Give up. I have not begun to fight." And the commander couldn't believe him. But what happened was 3 hours later, John Paul Jones took command of the British ship because they had to surrender, because they were so strong in their fighting, even though they had almost nothing left, and they refused to give up, that eventually they had destroyed enough of the other ship so that they had to give up. This was his most famous fight, and for which he is considered the kind of father of the American Navy. Well, this is supposed to be a peace school. Maybe this is not the most appropriate story to tell. But of course, I'm not talking about it as warfare. I'm talking about it, obviously, in another sense. What we need is not that fierce, willful determination that he had, which allowed him to win the day. What we need is to realize what he probably didn't realize. The place in which we have not yet begun to fight. That is where we must fight from. Do you understand? The place from which we have not yet begun. That is where the Buddhist fights, works from. And then we cannot help but succeed. So I offer this in the School of Peace here. This, by the way, is part of a peace school. Not as a story of war, but as a story of overcoming the army or the navy of illusion, of delusion, of our own self-entangled desires. Perhaps a better way of saying it is samsara. Do you all know the term samsara? Samsara is a Indian Sanskrit word, ancient. It goes back before the time of Buddhism. And it was the way they understood the world in terms of an endless cycle of thinking certain thoughts, performing certain actions, and then when we pass away, we are reborn again, depending on what we have done and thought in this life. So we may be reborn as an ant, or a horse, or a god, but even a god, of course, is still part of samsara, because when the virtue of that has ended, that God itself may be not God with a big G, but rather with a small G, may eventually again be reborn as an ant or as something in one of the hell worlds. The point is to take it out of this kind of bizarre, perhaps Indian way of understanding a few thousand years ago. It was a way they tried to understand what was happening in the world. But for us to see it in a more real way, very simply, samsara is the fact that what our mind does, what the self does with the world, with others, and with itself, leads to distress, to dis-ease, to suffering, inevitably, because it takes itself from here and asserts itself, huh? You might say, the will, huh? The will. It's inevitable that there will be pain, distress, dis-ease. So, we don't have to talk about being reborn as cows or ants or anything like that. We're talking about right here and right now what we do because of our mind, our thoughts, our feelings, our actions, our interaction. And I suppose, to some extent, all of you are here now because you have already seen, to some extent, the pain that inevitably happens, that inevitably occurs. As I said in the beginning, what the retreat is about, this is a Zen Buddhist retreat, is, we can say, to come to the end of that delusion, of that dis-ease. Again, destroying the army of Mara is another more dramatic way of putting it. But to turn it around, we can say to allow mind to return to the original oneness that it is. To allow mind right here, right now, to return to the original oneness that it is. Once again, we're not trying to create something. We're not trying to attain some special world or knowledge. On the contrary, allowing our mind right here and right now to return, this is also a metaphor, but to return to the original oneness that it is. In a sense, samsara, I press this because it's important for Westerners to have some insight into this. The fact that as long as the mind works the way that it normally does, from the point of view of self, pain, dis-ease, distress, it's inevitable. It's inevitable. And I think to some extent, we all realize that. That's why we're here. So once again, we're not trying to create another world view. Because that is also a part of samsara. Maybe a slightly improved version, but it's still samsara. So we're not trying to create something better, bigger, or smaller. Allowing our mind to return to its original oneness, the original wholeness, you might say. And this is why, in a sense, it's very true. It's very simple. We're not trying to do anything difficult or complicated here. It's the sheer simplicity of it that makes it seem so difficult for the ordinary cluttered mind. So once again, the first task, job for us here and now is to sit ourselves as this Buddha of all penetrating wisdom, sitting on this throne, again, very colorful, dramatic metaphors, sitting here and now and giving ourselves completely to our practice, whether it's a koan, whether it's the sitting itself, or whether, for example, it's pain in your knee at some point. If that's what it is, there it is. Be that. But not creating things out of it. Simply being fully one, inseparable from the present experience, then you cannot help but see through samsara. Just as certain as you cannot avoid pain, distress, and suffering when you are taking it from the point of self. Just as certainly, the end of that, sitting as this Buddha of all penetrating wisdom, that is our first task tonight. Is this clear? Is this clear? I would suggest we start again at 11, so let people have a little break, make sure they have the pillows they need. Does anyone need anything? Does everyone have what they need? If anyone is not sure where the one-on-one room, that could be a, where it is, that could be a bit embarrassing when you first go. Oh, okay. Either Vus or myself or Harm would be happy to show you before we start sitting again, where it is, if you're not sure. Okay? And then we'll start again at 11, so we want to be here a few minutes before 11 and start again. Correct? Okay? Thank you for listening so intently.